Welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Watch us live every Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11:05 a.m. at gosblive.com. Or visit us in person. You can find directions at gostonebridge.com. Connect with us on our social media at facebook.com/gostonebridge and our Instagram at SB Church.
All right, so most of us have thought this. See if you've thought this. I want to know if you haven't, and I'm going to make you raise your hand if you've thought this before. Have you ever thought, if I were just in charge? Okay, I hadn't finished yet. Don't vote yet. I understand. If I were just in charge, things would be different. How many people have ever thought that? Okay, the rest of you, you need to confess. And we, okay. Of course we have. That's pretty natural for us to do that. We just think, if I were in charge, if I were calling the shots, if I were the one, you know, making the decisions, just how different things would be. And so, you know, we've been talking about the life of Joseph in the Old Testament. And here's Joseph. In fact, let me put a map up for you. This is a map of Canaan. And you can see it over there. And then you see Egypt over to the left. So he was born, born and raised to, he was 17 in Canaan. And now he has been moved to Egypt. And Joseph doesn't know if he'll ever go back to Canaan, because by this time, Joseph is actually not totally in charge, but he is practically in charge. He is the second in command of Pharaoh. He has Pharaoh's signet ring. Whatever he says happens. Pharaoh has put his trust in Joseph. And so Joseph gets to make the calls and to make the decisions. But the question is, will he ever go back? And we talked about this last week. This is not the climax of his life. This is not the ultimate, because the promise that God made to Joseph had to do with the land of Canaan and his family that is still back in the land of Canaan. But he's in a good place and in a good time. And all of a sudden, in this part of the story, Joseph has to face this new question, and that is, can I trust my brothers? Because when he was 17, he found out, could he trust his brothers? What did he find out? No, he could not trust his brothers. And his brothers, they betray him. They sell him to some Ishmaelite traders who take him down to Egypt, and they sell him to a guy named Potiphar. But there in Potiphar's household, it says that Yahweh, it's the personal name for God, where I've told you in this time, they would refer to God in a different way. They would use the name, the Canaanite and Akkadian word for God, which is plural, Elohim, but they would use it in a singular way. But here, Moses, who is writing about Joseph, he goes and he says, but Yahweh, which is a name they won't know until Moses' day, but Yahweh, the personal God, the God who cares, who watches after, Yahweh was with Joseph. And because of that, Joseph prospered. Everything he did went well. Potiphar recognizes it. He knows everything he does goes well. Joseph, even though he's in a foreign land and a foreign place, Joseph has learned how to adapt and how to live in this world because of his trust in Yahweh, that Yahweh is with him. And last week, as we talked about, how do you know that Joseph knew Yahweh was with him? How do you know? By his actions. Everything he does says, I know Yahweh is with me. Even the things that Joseph does that you might think, oh, big mistake, because when Potiphar's wife decides years later that, you know, she wants Joseph, he says, no, can't do it, can't sin against God in this way. He makes this decision based on this one fact. What is that? That who is with him? Yahweh is with him. So as he looks at the situation, who she is, the power of what she can say, the power of Potiphar, he knows Potiphar will be mad if she goes back and says, I've been betrayed by him. He understands that, but he also looks at Yahweh and says, but Yahweh has been with me. Yahweh has caused me to prosper. Yahweh has watched after me. Therefore, he makes the decision based on the fact that Yahweh is with him, that he will refuse her, and he ends up in prison. But once again, while he's in prison, what does it say? Who is with him? Yahweh is with him. And once again, Joseph prospers in prison, so much so that Joseph is put in charge of the prison, and he runs it. And there he encounters two people from Pharaoh's court. Those two guys have dreams. He interprets those dreams. One is restored to the court. One is executed, and he tells the one who's restored the court, but don't forget me. He says, great, I won't forget you. He goes back. Does he remember Joseph? Anybody? No, he does not. He forgets it because things are good for him, right? Things are going good for me now. And he forgets all about him until who has a dream? Pharaoh has a dream. And it's a dream that really disturbs Pharaoh, really disturbs Pharaoh. And then he remembers. In fact, I still love the line where he says, I have been sort of caught in remorse because I promised a guy and I failed to deliver on the promise. But there is a guy in prison who can interpret dreams. He says, call him, bring him in. Joseph interprets the dreams. 7 years of incredible prosperity for Egypt. But Joseph says, you need to make a plan. And you need to put away 20% during those 7 prosperous years, because following the prosperous years, there are going to be 7 years of famine like Egypt has never seen before. And if you're unprepared, things will go bad. But guess what? If you're prepared, how will things go? Anybody? Yeah, they'll go fine. They'll go well. In fact, it actually goes really, really well for Pharaoh, because Pharaoh ends up owning most of the land, most of the country, most of the stuff in Egypt as he sells back grain, even to his own people and people from afar. And then the famine has gone all the way to all the lands of the earth. And there, all of a sudden, they realize, man, we need to do something, because there's famine here in the land also. But let me tell you what's going to happen, because this is how it relates to us. During this time, all of a sudden, God will deal with Joseph's brothers now. He will deal with the family, because they need to begin their journey, take their journey to a place of forgiveness also. Joseph is 40 years old at this point. So he, you know, this is from 17, now he's 40 years old. That means all of the brothers, because all the ones that are going to come are older than he is. They're in their 40s, 50s, maybe 60s, maybe even older than that. And I told you that I listen to J. Vernon McGee sometimes, who is a preacher of another generation, Texas kind of accent. And he would say, when he was talking about this, he would say, and them boys, when they came to Egypt. And I thought, no, them boys are old men, you know. They're, I like where some of the writers even say guys in their middle age. I said, no, they are old. They're not, you know, these guys have been around a long time, but they're still living in Canaan with their father. They're still very much looking to Jacob, their father, to make the decisions. And now all of a sudden God begins to deal with them also. So here's what it says in chapter number 42. It says in the first verse, when Jacob heard that grain was available in Egypt, he said to his sons, this is where J. Vernon McGee says, them boys, why are you standing around looking at one another, right? Okay, so he's right. That's what boys do. Like, okay, you know, we're dying. We have no food. What are you doing? Boys, get up and go to Egypt. And that's exactly what Jacob tells them. Look at the next verse, too. He says, I've heard there's grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy enough grain to keep us alive. Otherwise, will die. So Joseph's 10 older brothers went down to Egypt to buy grain. But Jacob wouldn't let Joseph's younger son, his name is Benjamin, and if you remember, we talked about Benjamin. Joseph and Benjamin are the two sons that are born to Rachel. Rachel is Jacob's favorite wife, you know, the whole story of Jacob. So these two are the most special to him. And he won't send Benjamin to go with him for fear that harm might come to him. So Jacob's sons arrived in Egypt along with the others to buy food, for the famine was in Canaan as well. Verse 6 says, since Joseph was governor of all Egypt and in charge of selling grain to all the people, it was to him that the brothers came. When they arrived, they bowed before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph recognized his brothers instantly, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Where are you from? He demanded. So here's Joseph. He's running the country. He's selling and distributing grain to even now people from other countries, other lands that are coming in. And he recognizes the 10 brothers. Now, one of the reasons is they still wear the same clothes they wore then. Okay, maybe not quite that bad, right? But they still look like they did then. You know, they still dress like they did then. Does Jacob look and dress like he did then? I know the young guys are saying, when is he going to do it? No, he walked like an Egyptian. He looked like an Egyptian. He talked like an Egyptian. Joseph would have looked very much like royalty in the court of Egypt because that's who he was. So they don't recognize him. Joseph speaks Egyptian, even though what language does Joseph also speak or understand? Their language also is going to play a big part in the story. So they come before him. He recognizes them. Can you imagine what is going through Jacob's heart now? What Jacob is thinking? Even as Jacob thinks back at his dreams 23 years earlier when he was 17 years old, and the dream that God gives him that we now learn is from God, because the dream was that they would come and they would bow down before him. And what you're going to see with the brothers is they have no problem changing their posture now to Joseph, now that they believe they will starve without this man in Egypt who has the food and the things that they need, where they rebelled and they were angry and they were jealous and they were hateful because of Joseph's dream before. But now they have no problem making a switch because of their own survival. This has to make an incredible impression upon Joseph. There's no way that Joseph can't stand there and think, wow, what does God have planned? I don't know if you've ever had this before where you felt like God intended you for something. You felt like God had plans for your life. And then all of a sudden, those plans seem to go away. They just seem to disappear. They seem to not be plans that could ever come about. And so many times, it's very easy for us to become bitter and angry and depressed and to lose all sense of goodness coming because we don't see how the plans could play out. And here is Joseph now seeing something that's happened that he could never have planned, never could have planned. There's no way in the world Joseph thought this was an acceptable approach to any of his dreams. But now he realizes once again, who's watching after him? Yahweh is watching after him. And Yahweh has him in exactly the place that Yahweh wanted Joseph. Maybe not the place that Joseph wanted Joseph or that Joseph thought he could get to this place, but this is the place that Yahweh wanted Joseph. The reason I bring this up is, listen, just because you and I can't figure it out, just because we can't make plans and make those plans come true does not mean, it does not mean, right, that Yahweh is not watching after us. In fact, it actually means when it happens that Yahweh was watching after us. If we could have figured it out, if we could have planned it, if we could have designed it, if we could have made it happen, guess who we would have given the credit to? Who? To we, right? Of course we would have. It worked out the way I planned. My hard work paid off. I'm not saying you don't work hard. I'm not saying you don't make plans. Of course you do. But there's another element of life that if you miss this element of life, who God is himself, listen, you miss the most important and the most powerful element of life. And Joseph is just standing there. You know, in one sense, maybe Joseph would have been a little bit of embarrassed, you know, if they knew who he was, because he doesn't look like them. He doesn't look like the brothers. But he recognizes that God has put him in this place, and he can attribute it to no one, even though Joseph worked hard. Joseph was smart. Joseph adapted. Joseph learned well. Joseph also understands, I can credit no one for this place and this time except who? Yahweh, right. Now think about it for a minute. If you saw your life that way, if I saw my life that way, if you understood that about your life, if I understood that about my life, how differently we would react to the situations around us. How differently we would take our steps in the days ahead for us because of understanding that God is the one who plans and God is the one that watches after us and God is the one who has moved us to those places because of his choices. Think about how differently our faithfulness to God would be if we understood it and we saw it that way. Would it be different? Of course it would be different. And it would be very different than the world we live in. Very different than the way the world thinks you get power, you get position, you get respect, you get something that satisfies you, which the world finds out never satisfies them. Then all of a sudden, Joseph, totally different life. How different our lives would be if we did the same thing, if we saw it the same way. Here's what it goes on to say. In verse number 7, Joseph recognized them instantly. He pretended to be a stranger. He spoke harshly to them. "Where are you from?" he demanded. "From the land of Canaan," they replied. "We have come to buy food." And listen to this. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they didn't recognize him. And he remembered the dreams he had about them many years before. He said to them, "You are," say it with me, "you're what?" "You're spies. You've come to see how vulnerable our land has become." So Joseph's approach, here's where what one of the things that I really struggle with, I will admit this to you. It doesn't seem very Christian to me. Does it to you? Certainly Joseph should say, "Listen, I'm your brother. It worked out really well. I know that you guys didn't know when you were coming, but all is forgiven, and I am in control of this country, and so it all is going to work out. It's all going to be fine." And that's just something about, I admit, it's just something about me and probably the culture that I've been raised in, how I see it, that I just think, but shouldn't he do it that way? And Joseph does not approach it this way at all. He approaches it in really the opposite way. "You're spies. You came," he accuses them, "you came to spy out the land and to see where we were vulnerable." In other words, to take advantage. Maybe you work for, you know, the Babylonians. Maybe you work for some of our enemies. You've come in. And Joseph would have to be weary of this, because since they had resources, every other country wanted and needed the resources that Egypt had. So this is part of Joseph's job, no doubt about it. But you know, Joseph's approach to these brothers, you just think, but shouldn't it certainly... Do you feel that way? You struggle with that? I do, except because I've lived longer than I had before. Since I've lived longer, I've recognized that actually what Joseph does has a real purpose to it, a real plan to it. And actually, I would tell you, I've learned over the years that his approach is the right approach and better than my approach would have been. "You're spies. You've come to spy out the land." He doesn't know, you know, what he hasn't seen them in 23 years. But also the approach is, Joseph is about to test his brothers. He's about to put him to the test. Think about how Joseph left them 23 years early. I put it in your outline. When Joseph last saw his brothers, they were in control, totally in control. So much in control that they sell him. They betray him. They decide to get rid of him. He's the one that's holding us back because he's the favorite of the father. He's treated different. We have every right to be angry and furious and jealous and to take our steps of anger against our brother. In fact, their jealousy and their hatred, here's what they realize, or maybe they realize now, that was what was controlling them. That's what controlled their life. It was their anger, their jealousy. See, think about it. What happens when you become so infuriated, you become so angry, you feel like you're mistreated? Something takes over you, and you act out of that, which clouds then your vision, and it clouds your actions. And I'm not just saying you. Listen, I do it also. And for us to be conscious of that and to be aware of that and to realize, listen, maybe I'm acting out of something that I should not act out of. Maybe this is not the best way to do things. And it may seem like, well, Joseph seems to be doing that also. Is Joseph acting out of vengeance, out of revenge? Well, we will see. But that's how they were controlled before. And then the third thing I thought of is, you know, they decided, we're just going to get rid of our problems, Joseph. And they do. They eliminate him. And so as far as they're concerned, you know, 23 years earlier, it's over. He's gone. But what you're going to find, even in the story here, it's not over for them at all. In fact, they still carry with them now the grief, this sense that one day this is going to come back on us, the guilt that is there, right? The idea that if you are thinking there is a Yahweh, if there's a God who watches after us, does he know? Can't get away from it. He knows. And he watches. And he sees. And if he is just, guess who's in trouble? We're in trouble. And so Joseph, he deals with them. It's his chance now, his turn, because now the tables are turned, and Joseph is the one who is in charge. And Joseph will be the one who decides, what does he act out of? Does he act out of revenge? Or does Joseph act out of something else that he has put his hope and his trust in, that he's learned from Yahweh being with him? And is Joseph going to try to, in one sense, just eliminate his struggle and his problems? So now Joseph, he decides to put his brothers to the test. You know, there's something about, I know even when I say that, you probably think, wait a minute, what right does he have to put his brothers to the test? Because whenever you've been in a situation and someone either that you work for or someone who is older than you, maybe your parents or someone who is a good friend who has the opportunity, puts you to the test, are you offended by it? I am, to an extent. What right do they have to put me to the test? What right do they have to challenge me? And yet, sometimes the people that care for you the most are the ones who will put you to the test because they do care for you the most. This is actually all through the Scriptures. And you go to the New Testament, and it says, hey, a father disciplines his sons and his daughters. Why? For a reason. He cares for them. He doesn't ignore them. He doesn't just let them do whatever they want to do, because it's his responsibility, in a sense, to put them to the test, in order to lead them and to guide them, to correct them, to move them forward. And that's exactly what Joseph takes on this position now in his life. It's time for me to test my brothers, see if they are different, if they have changed, but also it's his place to do this. I know I like to talk about my kids sometimes, so hopefully that doesn't offend you. I know it offends them, but, you know, it's tough. And when my daughter, just sweetest little thing. She's not quite 5 feet tall, but according to the U.S. Navy, she was, because there's no way she could get in. And she was, so at 4'11", 5 feet, she, 105 pounds, she goes in and she goes to the Naval Academy, where you're being trained as an officer. And what they do for the first period of time is they try to break you down. And you may say, well, that sounds cruel. It's not cruel, because what they're trying to do is break you of the old kid stuff that you have that's all just about you, break that part down so they can build you up as a leader, as someone who understands I'm responsible not just for me, I'm responsible then for these people also. And in doing that, they change. And so I remember my daughter, she takes a freshman group, 120, and she was their commander as they were coming in. This is her senior year, and she had some great stories of things that happened. And all my friends would say this, I just can't imagine her being that mean, right? You feel that way? I just can't imagine her being that mean. And so it was great, because for me it was really good conversations to have. So how did you do these things, or why did you do these things that they would say are mean, you know, because they're disciplinary, and sometimes the people you're doing things with don't understand why, but you know why, because it's your job. And so here's how she learned over 3 years to explain it. This is what she would say. I went through those things. I recognized that was part of the process, and now who is responsible for the next group going through those things and them going through the process? Who's responsible now? Who's responsible? Anybody? The leader. The leader. And it's not the leader's job to get everybody's permission or for everybody to agree with it. That's the opposite of the leader's job. The leader's job is to do the best thing for them, even if they don't understand it, even if they don't like it, even if they don't get it. If you are a mom and a dad, have you figured that out yet? You better, because that's your job. That's the way it works. And she did some really what you may call mean, tough things. And they said, I just don't understand how she could do it. I said, oh, I understand. Because they had been done to her. It's not revenge. It's recognizing that you have to change. And in order to go through changes, some things have to be broken so that they can be rebuilt the way they're supposed to be rebuilt if you are going to become a leader. If you're going to become mom or dad, if you're going to become the teacher, if you're going to become the one who takes some responsibility for those who are coming after you, and you recognize it's on me to help lead and guide them. I can't make them, but I can help lead and guide them to what they have to become, because one day they're going to have a group that they've got to lead and they've got to guide and they've got to do exactly the same thing. Does that make sense? Sure it does. Of course it does. If you've been a mom and dad or a parent, in fact, I love to tell the story, because Joni would say, you know, with the kids, I would come home at the end of the day at work and they'd come running out the door, "Dad, Dad, Dad." And they would love me and they'd hug me. And the first thing they'd say is, "Mom's been so mean," you know. So, and she would come out with her hands on her hip, steam coming out of her head, going, you know, and say, "Don't do that." You know, she said, "I'm the one that's been with them all day, and it's been my job to raise them," and da 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 da. You know, and so she was she a little bitter that they would come to me that? Oh, not a little, a lot, right? And I had to sympathize with that also and say, "I understand. I completely understand. And I completely back Mom, but you're right. I'm the one that loves you, and I'm the..." No, okay. So my kids, I probably shouldn't tell this because I'll get in trouble for this one too, but it's actually my wife's story. My wife said, you know, one day the kids came home and they'd been talking together, and Jamie was the leader. She was the oldest one. And as they were talking, they'd seen some kids in their class where their parents had gotten a divorce and had broken up. So they said, "Just want to let y'all know, and especially Mom, just let you know that we have been talking about it, my brother and I. And if y'all get a divorce, we're going with Dad." So, oh yeah, it was just way too good, because not only were they in trouble, I was in more trouble, you know. You know, it's time for you to be, you know, okay, so yeah. That's the way life works. And at some point, you sort of fight against this. And I know a lot of people that fight against it, only one day to wake up to the fact that that's actually the way it works. And there's something wonderfully noble about taking on that position and saying, "It is up to me to do this and to do this well." Why? Because I love my kids. Joseph is going to do this. Why? Because he loves his brothers and his family. This is not vengeance. And when you see it, you recognize he is not doing anything out of vengeance, but he is making sure that they have learned the lessons. He's making sure that he understands, and he's doing his part as God has put him in this place, his part to be responsible for some of the lessons and some of the actions that they have to go through. So here's what it says. Here's in verse number 10. I know you're thinking, "I'm mad at you already." Okay, that's all right. Here's what it says. "No, my Lord," they exclaimed. "Your servants have simply come to buy food. We are all brothers, members of the same family." Catch this. We are, say it with me, we are what? Honest. See, they have no idea who they're talking to, right? "We are honest men, sir. We are not spies." "Yes, you are," Joseph insists. "You have come to see how vulnerable our land has become." "Sir," they said, "there are actually 12 of us. We, your servants, are all brothers, sons of a man living in the land of Canaan." Catch this. They go ahead and say it. "Our younger brother is back there with our father." Remember, Benjamin's not coming because there's no way Jacob's going to... And then look at the next part of this. "And one of our brothers is no longer with us." Is that coming clean? Right? "But Joseph insisted, as I said, you are spies. This is how I will test your story. I swear by the life of Pharaoh that you will never leave Egypt unless your youngest brother comes here. One of you must go and get your brother. I'll keep the rest of you here in prison. Then we'll find out whether or not your story is true. By the life of Pharaoh, if it turns out that you don't have a younger brother, then I will know that you are spies." And the next paragraph says, "And he threw them in prison for 3 days. So here's some of the tests that he puts them through. In fact, you'll find a lot more, and especially as we go into the next chapter, you're going to see even more. But here's some of the tests. His first test is, what have they done with Benjamin? Because it's possible that you know, Benjamin became the favored one, and they decide to do away with him. And he doesn't know what has happened to Benjamin. So he's going to put them to the test, and there's nothing better than just saying, okay, bring him here. Oh, no, that's not going to happen. Bring him here. I want to see Benjamin. The second thing is, will one of the brothers step up for the others? And that's what he's going to challenge them with. Also, he's going to give them the opportunity to go back if one of the brothers stays and volunteers. Reuben sort of speaks up but does nothing. Judah sort of speaks up but ends up not making the move also. But eventually, it is Simeon that Joseph decides will stay. They did not decide. So in one sense, you could say they've sort of failed this. But let me just read a couple of verses out of this that's from my Bible that you have to go look up yours later. When they say they're honest men, Joseph has just said to them, this is in verse 18, that he fears Elohim. It's the word for God, but he uses it with singular verbs. So I fear the God that's out there, not the gods of Egypt. And once again, you know, their insistence that they're innocent men rings not true to one another. So it says in verse 21, then they said to one another, truly, we are guilty concerning our brother. And we saw the distress in his soul. This is Joseph when he's 17, when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. Now, what they don't know is, as they're talking this way among themselves, that Joseph actually speaks their language. And Joseph is listening, not letting them know. He hears what they say, and it breaks Joseph's heart. I mean, Joseph breaks down over it, but still will not say anything to them. And as it goes on further down in verse 28, they also add this. What is this that God has done to us? In other words, we're caught. God has absolutely caught us in this lie, and God has caught us in our treachery, and we cannot get away from it. And I don't know if you understand this, but it is so important for the family, for the brothers, for Joseph, for the future, for the church, that this happens, that there's an honesty, that there's a straightforwardness coming forth and saying, yes, we did this. And this is a step where they are doing it among each other, but they still haven't come out because the father doesn't even know. Jacob doesn't know that Joseph is alive. They've not said anything to Joseph. So they come up with this deal, and Joseph says, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you food, the food that you need. You pay for it. You go back. I'll hold Simeon. And as I hold Simeon here, then you bring back the other brother and money, and I'll let you buy more food. And now they're going back thinking, oh, man, this is so awful. And Joseph does this. This may even mess with you a little bit more. Joseph tells his servants, and take the money they paid for the grain and go back and put it in the grain bags, in the top of the bags. And so as they're going back to Canaan, traveling on this road back to Canaan, they open the bags, you know, because they need some food, only to find what? And this is where they say, God's got us. we found a way to kind of tell the half truth and get around it, but he's, oh my, what are we going to do now? Because now, not only was Joseph lost, Simeon's going to be lost, because we're not sure we're going to go back and rescue Simeon. How can we? Because we know that Jacob is not going to let Benjamin go back, especially when we say, and look, we have our, what do you mean you have your money? You bought the grain? No, but somehow it ended up back in the bags. And we are really set up. Are they in a dilemma? You ever been in a dilemma like that? You know the only hope you've got in a dilemma like that? Anybody? Yahweh. You can't figure it out. You can't con your way out of it. You can't work your way out of it. And Joseph is putting pressure on them because this third thing, will they show remorse for what they've done to Joseph? And he's just pushing them on in the test. Will they show this remorse? And will they abandon Simeon in Egypt? Now another brother, he will be lost. Jacob just cannot take it. Jacob just looks at himself. says, poor me, I've lost one, I'm about to lose another. How is this going to take place? And even Jacob sits and does nothing this time. He's in the same group with the brothers, just standing around looking at each other, right? Until they run out of food again. Now what are you going to do? The rains have not come back. The famine is not over. We've got to do something. So he says, all is lost. I'm going to lose it all now. Take Benjamin, go back. And, you know, we have no other choice but for you to just go back and do this anyway. Wow. Man. And I say that because maybe you feel like you're in that kind of place right now. I have no hope. I have no place to turn. I'm being tested. I'm being tried. And the problem is I'm being tried and I'm found as the one place the Bible says has been found wanting, right? In other words, I can't stand the test. I can't stand up to it. Unless there's a God that loves us. Unless there's a God who rescues. Unless there's a God who says, I just want you to be honest. I want you to speak the truth. God knows anyway. He knows you. He knows me. He knows everything that we have done, everything that we do. He knows our thoughts. He knows our heart. And yet God still cares about us. This is an important place in the story because this is where God proves once again he still cares about Jacob and the brothers. And it's not because they did everything right. No. But God is going to make sure that wounds are healed, that things are fixed. Not there won't be new ones, there will. But there has to be a process. And there has to be a place where God is put in the position that he should be placed in because he is the healer. He is the truth teller. He is the compassionate one. God is the one that comes back and he brings it back. And God is the one who not only knows the future, but God is the one who controls the future in order to bring about his plans and his purposes. Would you pray with me this morning? And I know even as we speak about this, there may be things that come to your heart and come to your mind that only you know. Maybe things that you had hoped would go away a long time ago and you hope no one would ever know about. And yet the problem is it happens to all of us, you find yourself still carrying those things around. You're not free from them. Joseph seemed the only one to be free from the heartache, the pain, the misery, and yet he was the recipients of it. But it's the way life works. It's actually the perpetrators that carry so much more, who are bound up or trapped. And God is the freer. Scripture says that God sent Jesus Christ into this world as our Savior, as our rescuer, while we were still guilty, caught in our sin. Doesn't even say when we confessed our sin. Just while we were guilty and caught in our sin, God knew, God understood, God loved, and God cared. And he sent the rescuer of the world so that Jesus Christ would live on this earth. He would live 33 years. He would live a sinless life. He would be tempted and struggle with everything that you and I struggle with. He just would not sin. He would stay the course so that he could offer his life as a payment for our sins, so that he could set us free from the things that held us and bound us, so that we could move forward to become the sons and the daughters that he'd always planned for us to be. And Jesus goes to the cross 2,000 years ago, not to pay for his own sins, but to pay for our sins, even those of us who live now 2,000 years later. He would take our sins to the cross. He would nail them to the cross, so that we would be free from them and the power of them. We still sin. We still struggle. But we know by faith, we believe that Jesus Christ has set us free because he has a future for us. He has a plan for us. If you've never given your heart to Jesus Christ, he still lives. still changes hearts. He still changes lives. He's still the only answer, Jesus Christ, the only answer for the people of this world. In his name we pray.